Other horn, go.
Everything that we do every day, we want to be a champion.
Get your mind right and let's go. Do the little things. Win every day.
It's a someplace they play football.
Everything with an attitude.
Alabama.
I don't give a shit who we're playing.
Nothing they can play against and make his ass quit. That's our framework. That's our MO as a team.
Richardson breaks free on the sideline. End zone.
This is a mauling, folks, a mauling.
Fear the tide, honey badger.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the Alabama Football Podcast. Tom, the tide traveled to Knoxville on Saturday and took care of business to the tune of 44-13. Those kinds of margins are becoming commonplace. Is it too early to say that this team is pretty good?
Man, it is not too early. I was kind of looking at some stats, you know, because we're hopefully at the midpoint of the season if we have bowl aspirations. And there were just some things that jumped off the page that was just mind-boggling. First of all, you know, just the balance that this offense has is just really amazing. It's just so hard to defend this team with their balance. You know, they had 253 yards at the half, and they finished with 539 yards. And they had almost exactly the same amount of passing and rushing yards in the second half. And so I guess that'd be my first comment. I mean, how do you stop a team with the balance that Alabama possesses?
Well, it's almost diabolical, right? When you go back and look at the numbers, it's almost as if we're trying to script to get a perfect balance. And some of the other kind of national stats that I saw this week, you know, not only are we ranked number one in defense, just overall defense, but we're ranked number one in multiple categories, and that's national. But then also, it comes out this week that we have the number one rated in terms of pass efficiency, the number one rated passing offense in the league, or not in the league, but nationally. And you start to think, wow, the number one passing efficient offense and the number one ranked defense, is this team beatable?
Well, man, I'll tell you another stat that jumped out at me. You know, he always talks about, you know, putting your foot on their throat out the gate. I was shocked that we've scored 300 points for the year, but our margin in the first quarter has been 90-3. And our margin in the second quarter has been 94-28. So just to, you know, just getting out the gate, right, making their ass quit, we're up 184-30 just in the first half.
Yeah, absolutely. And we're averaging 41 a game. Never thought we'd see an Alabama team averaging quite that high. And in the defense is averaging 8. And so these numbers, you know, can be looked at and spun a lot of different ways. And I'm being a little bit facetious when I say, is this team beatable? But it just says, you know, that we come to work every day on both sides of the ball. And it's going to take a collapse as well as a heroic effort by an opponent to topple this team.
I agree. And let me just say to Todd Blackledge real quick, man, you are the best color commentary in the college game, in my opinion. I enjoy, you know, I wish it would have been a home game, but to be able to listen to him when I went back and watched the replay and listen to him, you know, two different times during that, you know, the game and the replay, just some of the points that he brings out is such good insight into the game. But two things he said that was wonderful. He just talked about, you know, just the relentless attitude. They go to work every play, and, you know, their goal is to stop every single play on defense and not give you an inch. And then talked about just making their ass quit. And Saban talks about this, right? You know, play every play. And, you know, make their ass quit. That's our trademark. Well, David, this is the first time this season that I have truly spotted a few Tennessee defensive players. Their ass was quitting, and it was the third quarter.
Sure. Well, let's take one side of the ball. Why don't we start on offense, and what jumped out at you on offense?
You know, we've already talked about the balance. The next thing, you know, I'll get to Cooper in a minute. I just have to take a second and talk about AJ. We are just so lucky to have him as a quarterback. You know, that South Carolina, Florida game, you sit there and see Connor Shaw, the first snap of the game, you know, guy's coming right in his face. He doesn't even see it. The guy just knocks a ball, comes up to him and knocks a ball out of his hands. And I sat there and I was like, you know, that would never happen to AJ. His pocket presence, his awareness, He's got two tackles that I've talked about on numerous occasions, struggle with rushers on the edge, but just his ability to have guys right beside him and still making the throws, even after what happened with his knee last week. Yes, the line's good. Yes, the running backs are good. But, man, he makes it all go. He is really coming into his own.
Yeah, I think there were two leads on offense, if you will. And you know, you chose McCarron, which I think is certainly a good way to go. I mean, he set a personal career best with his yardage, 306 yards, four touchdowns on 17 completions. He was 17 of 22. That's sort of in that wheelhouse that you like for his numbers. And so, to finish that efficient, that many yards, that many touchdowns on 17 completions, only five incompletions, almost as many touchdowns. That's pretty heroic play. And when you compare, it's funny you mentioned that you saw Connor Shaw get tackled. You know, just the thing on Connor, you know, he's a son of a high school football coach. And so he kind of understands, we've talked about this with Vinny, you know, kind of understands the language of football. I've watched South Carolina a number of times this season, and he has always been impressive, with the exception of the INT against LSU and then just some of his plays against, you know, Florida are unexplainable. But he seemed to have that awareness, and maybe LSU knocked it out of him. But I watched also the LSU-Texas A&M game. Of course, you know, Mettenberger is his own story, but this, you know, Johnny Football, they're talking about at Texas A&M, you know, setting all these kinds of records. I found myself, and I couldn't help it. It just was happening. But I found myself throughout that game critiquing just about every drop back, every pass. You know, how would AJ have done that? And I just can't help but think that he's emerging as one of the better quarterbacks in the country. His numbers, sort of just gross numbers, may not put him in that category. But when you watch him play and compare him to the play of other quarterbacks, he's there.
He is there. And this was the makeup of balance that, like you said, that I love, because he threw for, you know, a record in a game while only attempting 22 passes. There has been games this year where he's attempted 30 passes and he's only thrown for, you know, he's only averaged, you know, 10 yards of completion. And so it's funny to me that on 22 attempts, you know, he actually averages over 15 yards. And so that's just the effectiveness of the play action pass and how many teams are just selling out for the run. There was a couple occasions in this game where, I mean, Tennessee was pulling out all the stops on defense. We'll talk about offense for them and the same thing in a minute. But, you know, they kept bringing up the corner. The safety would not roll over. You know, there was a couple opportunities where AJ had wide open guys. Oh, but there goodness, were other yeah. There was other opportunities where he had eight guys in the box and there was no safety in the middle of the field. And he's like, are you kidding me? And there wasn't even a lot of movement at the line. I was surprised that Tennessee in the back seven didn't really move around a ton. They talked about them having to simplify things for, you know, Sun Series defense because they weren't getting the complex schemes that he wants to bring from, you know, from Saban. But man, their defense played really pretty well against the run, but against the pass, they were atrocious.
Yeah, they were pretty decent, you know, close to the line of scrimmage. I made a note at one point, it looked like some of the holes were opening and closing very quickly. But on the back half, they were just atrocious. And I know we're talking offense, you know, we can talk about their weakness on defense and sort of correlate it to our defense. You know that Sincere is trying to implement many of the same principles. You see how it works when it does work, and you see how it doesn't work when it doesn't work.
No, that is true. You know, we had 12 explosive plays in this game, which is key. And for Saban, he talked after the last game of, we've really got to evolve the passing game. And, you know, I heard Tony Barnhart talking after the game, and he said, man, if they can pitch and catch it like this, he said, that's just not even fair. And this really was the most complete game that I think they have played all year. And it was a great time against one of our biggest rivalries.
Absolutely, which makes it that much more fun, right? Because, you know, we go to their place and then just get to demoralize them while they're celebrating former going into the NCAA Hall of Fame and all of that. So we get to sort of ruin that moment, which I think is nice. I think the other lead, you know, we talked about McCarron, and certainly he's worthy of the spotlight. I think it's a dual spotlight, and just what makes, you know, sort of the Saban era so amazing to me is we had two. It was really the freshman show. After McCarron, it was the freshman show. We have Amari Cooper breaking out, you know, 162 yards, and then Yeldon. Right. You know, Yeldon has 15 carries for a 129. Both of them have two touchdowns, you know, a piece, so four total, you know, from freshmen. And you think a Saban fully recruited, there's not a player on the team that's not a Saban recruit. And so you think a Saban laden team that we're getting that sort of breakout performance from freshmen. And so whatever anyone else would want to say from a recruiting standpoint that, you know, don't go to Alabama because, you know, you won't be able to find the field. Well, these guys seem to have located it pretty well.
No, they have. And Saban talks about maturity in his press conference. And he talked about those two players and the fact that they were able to be, that they're very mature and they were able to do the little things to improve on their play. And, you know, we talked back when Julio and Mark Ingram and Trent was here, that it was so important to have three guys bringing about 100 all purpose yards to the field. And with Cooper coming, you know, just coming out of nowhere, I never would have thought we would have said this, you know, because we were expecting Norwood and Kenny Bell to be those guys that we were counting on. Well, both of them are averaging about 35 yards a game. Amari Cooper is close to doubling the performance of Kevin Norwood and Kenny Bell at this point. And that just is very surprising.
What also speaks to just the stepping up, because there's DeAndre White, who would have, you know, gotten some of these catches, and Cooper's running some of his routes. And then there's Justin Fowler, too, who would have who would be getting some of these touches maybe that Yeldon's getting. And so, you know, I think I read somewhere, I think it was Michael Williams, you know, made the comment that, you know, if you're good enough, then you're old enough. And good enough isn't just raw talent, but it's understanding the schemes and it's understanding your responsibilities and executing against those responsibilities, not just making the flashy play. And for these young guys to come in, adapt to the Saban system, this offense, and then perform at this level, even stepping up, you know, with some injury, very, very impressive for these youngsters.
It is. And going back to AJ for a second, right? Because they have egos, let's face it, and we do want to keep them happy. And for him to only complete, you know, 15 or 17 balls, but still be able to give them all a little bit, right?
Yep.
Chris John Jones got a little. Norwood got a little. Kenny Bell had his typical slant across the middle for, you know, why we don't do that one time every game, I don't know. But they all got a little something, even though he's only completing 15. And that's what's so amazing to me, because we see games where quarterbacks drop back 55 times and they're not distributing the ball like he is.
Right.
And don't forget, Michael Williams even got him involved too.
Yeah. So, and it's what's funny to me is sometimes you talk sports and you need an analogy from another sport to make a point. And it's almost like basketball when you have a superior point guard. It doesn't matter what the play is. It doesn't matter, you know, who the star player is. You need to always be ready to catch the ball, because if you're open, you're going to get it. And you need to trust the talented point guard that he's going to distribute to more than just one or two people. And so McCarron is that point guard, in a sense that if you're open, be ready for the ball, because he's going to check through and he's going to go to the right person more times than not. And that's going to lead to some well-distributed balls.
Oh, absolutely. I want to touch on offense for a quick second about Darren Sentimore. I was a little frustrated because he made some comments that I wasn't too impressed with leading up to the game. And
sure.
And he was handled pretty well most of the game by even Michael Williams on several plays. But there was one play when we had some momentum there where Cyrus just blocks in and leaves him unprotected, and he gets to make a play on AJ, and it just so frustrated me. I was like, what a shame he gets to make this play because he's unblocked. So that stood out at me. That frustrated me after the way he made the comments he made. I was glad we still, you know, crammed it down his throat, but that was a shame that he was able to make that play because he was left unblocked.
Yeah, and I agree. I would love for us to stone him. What I think it does for those really paying attention is it sort of underscores Saban's comments that we had no problem with what he did on the field. It was his off the field. And so he sort of demonstrated that. He showed some lack of character in his off the field comments.
Yes.
But on the field, he produced.
Right.
And so he snapshotted what Saban said.
Hey, something else that jumped out at me, you know, because Cooper would have had a third touchdown on that, on that third and 14 play. I wanted to touch on, for those that might not have picked up on this, that had one of those wide receivers on the right been on the line of scrimmage, and I think it was either Christian Jones or Cyrus Jones, but had one of them been where they should have been, that would have been a touchdown on a big third and 14.
Yep.
But what was so key there, because here we are halfway through the third quarter, that was their first penalty of the night. And when they said that, I was like, oh my gosh, what a devastating time to have your first penalty.
One is just a knucklehead. You know, it's just one of the receivers not lined up.
Do the little things, right?
And exactly. What a knucklehead thing, though. It's, you know, it's not like a lineman, you know, that gets called for a hold or something. It's just very knucklehead. Line up where you're supposed to. I mean, we can't even run the darn play without you lined up right. And of course, it's a touchdown. And him, that receiver, whichever one it is, not being on the line of scrimmage, had zero impact on the play other than you have to have 7 men on the line of scrimmage. You know what I mean? It wasn't. Yeah. You know, we didn't run an illegal pick, and that's why the receiver was open. We didn't commit offensive pass interference, and that's why the receiver was open. We didn't hold a defensive end, and that's why the quarterback was able to get rid of the ball. It was just a bonehead, you know, tie your shoes and line up right.
No, that's true. And I also want to touch on the play calling for a second, because I think I didn't see a lot of checks at the line of scrimmage, so I have to say that Nungesser gets a lot of the credit here. I'm just you've spoke a couple times about that what he's bringing and the wrinkles he brings with getting everybody involved, and there's just a couple quick highlights of some really good play calls. There was a situation right out of the halftime where we come out, we have the ball on the 30-yard line. He's got Christian Jones. Us in this backfield to the right or slanted out to the right. He motions him to the left in the H-back position. He then fakes the handoff to Eddie Lacy, play action to the left. Christian Jones just peels in the backfield out to the right in the flats like he did last week against Missouri and catches a simple ball, but AJ puts it where he can catch it in stride like we've been, you know, wanting quarterbacks to do for so long. And he gets like 15 yards. And the next thing you know, first and 10 at the 40. And that's just a little thing. But it's like, okay, we've seized the momentum back on the very first play of scrimmage, you know, very first play of the second half. Yes, it ended badly with y'all, you know, getting that late score in the second quarter. But here we are, you know, running again. And so I just thought that was a great play call. And then there was another situation where they took Michael Williams. And they let Michael Williams rub with Amari Cooper so that Amari Cooper on one of those plays where he drug across the middle and was able to just go around, you know, go down the left sideline for like a 20-yard gain. There was just a couple plays like that I thought were great examples. Him being up in the box, seeing the whole field, that he just seems to really have a very good knack at being able to expose a weakness.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I have a couple of examples, you know, kind of detail plays as well. It's as if we knew and we studied film, right? And so we did know where they would struggle and especially where they would struggle in their assignments. And so on the Michael Williams touchdown, you know, and you're right. Blackledge even said, you know, this is the first play you install when you teach a goal line offense, you know, is the tight end scraping and running to the back of the end zone. But we ran that off play action in which we had the fullback cut across and just kind of go over into the flat. And then, you know, we fake the handoff to Lacy up the middle. Lacy could have run for a touchdown. They showed the camera angle from the back, and he had a gaping hole that he could have rushed in for a touchdown. Kelly Johnson was the fullback, and they ended up, you know, double, triple covering him in the flats and left the hole wide open that Lacy could have run through, or we ended up throwing the pass to Michael Williams. And so we could have scored that touchdown two different ways out of three offensive players just right there. And then on Amari Cooper's first touchdown, we were lined up in a three receiver set, and we had all three receivers on the right side of the field. And so we run, you know, basically if you segment the end zone into thirds, the three receivers ran to each of their respective thirds. And so the inside receiver had to slant across the field. The middle receiver had a lesser slant towards the goalpost, and Amari pretty much was just ran a straight route. And they had them each covered at the line of I even went back and diagrammed it because I was just amazed. But they had each of the receivers covered, you know, man on man. And the receiver over the middle, and it was Kenny Bell in the middle, he came down to guard the flat as if he's protecting the zone. Maybe the receiver or the running back made a move there, but never really came into the camera. A linebacker drifted back. The defensive back on Norwood, who was the most inside receiver, he came down into the line of scrimmage like he was going to be a linebacker. And the cornerback on Amari Cooper shifted and went with Kenny Bell. And so Kenny Bell was double teamed. Amari Cooper was wide open in the end zone, and they kept showing that angle and talking about how open he was. And he was wide open. He caught that touchdown. But what no one commented was how wide open Kevin Norwood was at the top of the field. And so there again, we had two wide open receivers in the end zone.
Well, see, on that play, though, what was surprising about that set is they actually had six guys at about 5 yards off the line of scrimmage.
Yeah.
And all six of those guys actually played a zone action. They kind of stayed in a zone when the play started. They had one guy over the top behind them in the middle of the field. And so to your point, I don't know why they were aligned like that. It was like a cover one with six guys in front of him, which I have not seen before. And so when those three guys ran out, they're all running at him. And he's like, I have to cover all three of these people. Because nobody came back to help.
There's no way.
Helping is what I was saying.
Yeah, and so that would have worked great if the play were run from the 8 yard line
or the 5 yard line, right?
Well, yeah, because right. Then you know you can't help but cover somebody just by standing there. But because that play was so far out, it allowed. And I think you know Amari was probably the primary, and so he was wide open, and so you throw the ball
amazing.
To him.
I
was kind of surprised that the announcers didn't go back and say, you know, look at this again. Kevin Norwood's wide open at the you know, kind of the top of the field. He was more open than Amari, to be honest with you.
That was like peewee football. Hey, I've got an interesting stat that I want to throw out to you on offense real quick. This is through AL.com. They were talking about money plays. And these plays were designed as plays resulting either in a first down or a touchdown. So I was kind of surprised by this. Eddie Lacy's had 100 carries on the year. TJ's had 83. They both have had roughly equal on first down as well as second down. But on third down, so far this year, out of 83 carries, TJ Yeldon has only carried the ball twice on third down. That kind of surprised me.
That's a very surprising stat.
Then on the receiving side, Amari Cooper has doubled all receivers with 28 catches. Kevin Norwood is next with 14. Who would you say is the money guy on third down? Most catches.
I am probably going to say Michael Williams.
Amari Cooper, 12 of his 28 catches.
Okay.
Have been on third down, with eight of them being money plays, either a first down or a touchdown. But would you be surprised that next is Kenny Bell?
Wow. Yeah.
So Kenny Bell's only had 10 catches on the whole season, six of them have gone for a first down or a touchdown. So that's the epitome of your one trick pony. Maybe he's a two trick pony.
Right.
Hey, anything else jump out at you on offense?
What did you think of Blake Sims was in for a couple plays earlier than we would typically expect to see him. And it looked like we ran one play with him and McCarron on the field, at least one play with him and McCarron on the field at the same time. Any that mean anything to you?
I wasn't even going to go there. I was going to let this go today.
Okay.
I absolutely hate it. I went back and when I was looking at these season stats real quick, especially after AJ and everything we talked about last week with catching our breath when he went down, Blake Sims has attempted three passes for the season. Philip Ely has attempted three passes for the season. So you've got your star quarterback, everything riding on, who almost blew a knee last week. And you still have your two backups have only attempted six passes combined for the year. And so, first of all, Sims must be the guy, which frustrates me because I don't think he should be number two. Second of all, he comes in to run that stupid little, you know, run action stuff that they do that I can't stand. And then he fumbles a damn ball. I actually love the fact that he fumbled because I don't want him in there in that situation. And I thought that we would see Philip Ely come in. Who comes back in the damn game? Sims.
Well, it was later in the game when he fumbled. He came in much earlier in the game and ran that zone read.
Hated that play.
Well, and it just got blown up. And so what it tells me is, look, when he comes in here, he's got, you know, four plays that he's going to run. Bet on it being the zone read because, you know, he's made some money on those plays.
I know, but call it real quick, right? What's your call? Is it, what is it? What's your little phrase you call to the little cutesy little play? I mean, that's just crazy to even have him in there. I mean, this was a great opportunity with the game in hand to bring in Ely for a series, bring in Sims for a series, let them run the full offense. Don't try to embarrass Dooley. Keep it simple, but let them complete some 5-yard passes, some 8-yard passes. You know, try to let them throw some of the different throws. So if AJ goes down next week for the season, you actually have a quarterback who's actually tried to run the offense.
Yeah, I really do wish that, I don't have really anything to add to that other than I wish that were the case. I wish that we were getting some meaningful reps to the backups. And to this, even to this point, I don't know who to really call the backup. I guess you have to go with Blake Sims, but I just don't know if that's the right answer. Not that he's not the right player, but literally, I don't know if that's the right answer. You know,
But that zone read is not us. I mean, it's just not us. I wish he wouldn't have had success in mop-up duty.
Well, that's part of why I say the question, I don't know if it's the right answer, because he comes in and he has success with those plays. Okay, that's fine. I'm not going to be so upset about that. But if we had to bring in a quarterback for the second half of the game, we're not going to run zone read for a half. So who really is going to be that guy? Who really would be the backup quarterback?
Well, you saw when AJ went down last week, you saw who was warming up. It was Blake Sims.
Maybe. Well, like I said, maybe that is the answer. I don't know that that's the right answer just because I don't know, not because I'm down on the guy.
Oh, I'm down on the guy. Yeah. I don't know him. I think he could be a great person, but the zone read is not for Alabama. That is not our offense. I mean, let's flip to defense before I get more frustrated.
I think we're making the same point. I think we're making it differently, but I think we're making this a very similar point.
Hey, while we're kind of jerking players around for a second, because we did say this was the most complete game they've played all season, I'm also not very happy with Nick Perry. Nick Perry, a couple times, Tennessee had, 500 and something yards a game coming into this game. The best quarterback we've seen, two great receivers. Everybody listening knows all those things. But they completed, I believe, four passes for 25 yards or greater. And two or three of those opportunities was because of Nick Perry. I think it was just two. But twice Nick Perry was supposed to be in a zone. He left his area of the zone completely open, went and covered somebody like a running back in the flats that wasn't even his guy. You know, let me just give you a quick example here. There was a particular play where we had a middle blitz We had both inside linebackers blitzing the quarterback. Nick Perry shuffles up. He's supposed to take their area that they have vacated. Instead, he goes to the running back in the flats, who's already been covered. They let a tight end rub across the middle for a slant, wide open.
Yep.
And it's all because of him.
Yep.
And so between Nick Perry and HaHa, don't get me wrong, HaHa's dynamic. But HaHa also had a couple situations where he was supposed to be helping the cornerbacks deep. And one time he was supposed to be helping Ballou deep, and he did not. And luckily, Hunter dropped the ball. But I'm just not happy with those two right now. HaHa still got time to develop. He hasn't been in the system as long. But, man, both of those guys are frustrating me in the back.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think Nick Perry was redshirted, and so I think this may be his junior redshirt. Yeah, this is his fourth year in the system. And so, you know, HaHa, this is only his second. And then you take Atlanta Collins, who this is his first year. And so what you would really want to get out of Nick Perry is him understanding system. And he may not be as athletic and dynamic, but he knows where to be. And so it's frustrating when we see him make those mental errors. If he makes a physical error because, you know, look, this is the fourth year in a system and he's just now being able to get on the field, then maybe athletically I can forgive that more than I can a fourth year guy in the system struggling to line up right, struggling to read his keys and, you know, be where he needs to be. That is a little frustrating. I'm going to say this because you started with Nick Perry and you know, he was kind of the visual on the television screen. I'm going to distill down our success on defense to one thing, to sort of one image. When Mosley picks off the ball, and so Mosley makes a big interception, they cut to the sideline, and Saban is having a coaching moment with Nick Perry. And so you would see a lot of head coaches jumping up and down and celebrating, and where do I go find the player? You know, think of Muschamp when he's tackling his players on the sideline after a big play. You would see a lot of that sort of garbage by head coaches celebrating the play.
Right.
What you find is Saban grabbing a safety that was on a different part of the field, completely away from the play, coaching him up on
not doing his job.
Not doing your job, because next time or last time or in a future game, we're not going to get this interception. We're going to give up a touchdown because of the quarterback making the read on your misplay as opposed to making a bad read on something that allowed us to make a play.
No, that's a good point.
And until we had a short field for a touchdown, and they showed on the sidelines the defensive guys, and they weren't just standing around drinking Gatorade, giving everybody high fives, waving to the crowd. They were in a tight huddle coaching up the next series. And just, that's how you win. That's, you know, why are these guys so good? How can they implement it and execute so flawlessly? Because we don't let a minute pass that we're not, you know, improving and preparing and getting better.
No, that's true. But let's go back to Nick Perry for a second, right? I don't think he sees the field right now if Jerick Williams had not gotten hurt for the year. And I also don't think he sees the field if HaHa didn't have a better grasp of the defense after a year and a half in the system. And I don't think he sees the field if Vinny Sunseri has a little bit more speed. Because let's be fair, on Robert Lester's interception, not to jump around real quick, thank goodness Tyler Bray throws the ball behind the receiver, so Robert has a play on the ball, but the guy ran right by Vinny. And so I think it was supposed to be zone, but, you know, he was in Vinny's area, and literally Robert had to come over and kind of help out there. So my drawing that conclusion is that I think that there are three people who would have been in line over Nick Perry. Actually, four. Yeah, I guess three. So I think it would have been Jerick Williams, HaHa, and Vinny. And because none of those pieces, they're not comfortable with any of those pieces being the center fielder in the back, a la Robbie Green years ago, to bring up his name, Nick Perry's the guy.
Right.
And so because he doesn't grasp it,
You see what I'm saying?
Sure.
I wish Vinny had that extra 0.2 seconds on his 40 that Nick Perry has, because then Vinny would be back there.
Sure. No, you're probably right. You're probably right.
Hey, on that play real quick that we were highlighting, there is one other thing that epitomizes this defense that I had to go back and rewind 2 or 3 times to make sure I saw this. I don't know if you noticed this, but on that play where the tight end gets tackled at the 5-yard line to save that touchdown mm-hmm. temporarily, Xavier Dixon, who you know I think is a hell of a player, he was the defensive end on that play. He backs up in a zone read type of scheme. And when he sees the tight end catch the ball, even though it's not his guy, he starts to pursue. And at the 30-yard line, almost like if they did a 30-yard sprint, the camera angle had him and Lester and Nick Perry all at the 30 pursuing. They were all crossing the 30 at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
Dixon beat him to the tight end.
I know.
Oh my freaking gosh! He just outran Robert Lester and Nick Perry, our two safeties.
I wrote that down, and what it's funny to name the names because that's exactly, you know, what it was. What stood out to me is, you know, it looked like a math test running down the field, because we had 27, 37, and 47 all pursuing the tight end. And you think the biggest number is not going to get him, but you're right. The defensive
end. How did that happen? How did he outrun our two safeties? Hey, yeah. on that series real quick, one other thing that jumped out at me is they were lined up at the goal line before they scored there. And I don't know if you noticed this as well or anybody else watching, but on this one goal line series, we have DJ Pettaway outside on the, I guess, left side, which I haven't seen him line up out there very much in a goal line formation. And we've got Tana Patrick, who, you know, I don't have to talk about Tana Patrick, right next to him.
Mm-hmm.
And what does DJ Pettaway do? He doesn't even set the edge. He just crashes down. Tana Patrick gets blown up by a fullback, and that's where they score their touchdown.
Mm-hmm.
And I go back at the highlight and I'm like, those are two guys in that formation that are normally not there.
Right.
Later in the game, neither one of them were out there.
Yeah.
But I don't know if you noticed those two particularly, especially Tana Patrick. That might have been the only defensive play he played the whole game. He was just blown up.
Yeah, I got a kick out of, you know, they show the guys running out of the tunnel, and they kind of and so they had a shot of the guys from behind running out of the huddle, and you see them kind of bouncing up and down, getting ready to play. And I saw Patrick, you know, number 11, you know, jump, you know, kind of jumping, you know, like, oh, I'm motivated to go, you know, play. And I thought, man, you know, running out onto the field to start the game, with the exception of special teams, maybe the only time that you are on the field, except for when you're on a field to give up a touchdown. So,
hey, a couple other things real quick on defense. But first of all, I want to give some love to Blue. I think Blue had a hell of a ball game. Blue had to, you know, Blue and Milner both had a difficult matchup, but more balls went Blue's way. Against two very talented receivers.
Yes.
And there was a couple times that the safety didn't give help over the top, and he was man on man. And I'm sure you noticed the play where everybody thought there was a pass interference, and they go back and you know, Todd's like, no, that was just, you know, that was just good coverage. There was a little back and forth there, but I just thought that he played, you know, we heard in the spring about him being the best lockdown corner that we have on the team.
Mm-hmm.
He showed it to me in that ball game.
Yeah, and he's starting to show it. And I think that, you know, it's sort of almost, you know, it was just sort of a breakout party. And not that he's played bad at all.
No.
But for all the high reviews, you know,
he brought it.
If we start to see this on a week-over-week basis, you know, we're the number one ranked defense in the country, about to get better.
Well, and what's really funny about that, going to another stat that I looked at here, for the season, this just jumped out at me. Most of our guys, okay, let's take Blue. He's got 4 pass breakups for the season, okay? Vinny's got 3. Nick Perry's got 2. The rest of the guys have 1. D. Milner, would you be surprised if he's got 13, that he's been picked on that much already this year? So back to your point, they've already, for some reason, picked on the most experienced guy so much that he's got six times more pass breakups than anybody else. If Ballou starts coming on like this, this is going to be very scary for offense against our defense.
Sure. And I could almost make the case for you know, we're kind of insiders. We're closer to the team than maybe, you know, someone else. But I could almost make the case for, let's go after this Milliner guy. We've seen him get beat, and the other guy's a JUCO All-America.
That's fair.
I can kind of see that on paper. Knowing the players the way that we do, I would not have made that decision to start the season. But I think it's really borne out, you know, how well he's played. And I think I'm already on record calling, you know, Milliner, if he keeps it up, he's going to be an All-America type player. So
No, he is. Hey, there's one other quick thing that I want to throw out there on defense. I'm sure you saw this too, but when Blake Sims has his fumble and the second string is in the game at this point, mm-hmm. notice Fanning was not in the game. He's one of the few players that didn't play.
I think he did not make the trip.
Well, good call on Saban's part.
Yep.
But when the second string is out there and they're trying to keep them from scoring, the camera, thank goodness for us, shot over to all the first string guys, not only standing over there up to your point, right? They could be checking the girls out in the stands at this point, but not only are they watching at the sideline, but their helmets are on and they're just sitting there rooting on these guys, you know, the epitome of a team effort. Don't bend, don't give up a touchdown here. And I just thought that was the coolest thing.
Yeah, I think Saban in his press conference, I don't know if it was the post game or the one today, you know, kind of ribbed the reporters, you know, like he likes to do. But he says, you know, you guys didn't believe me when I said this was a high character team. And you see high character in those little things. You know, we talk about little things. And so, you know, the first team, you know, defense could be snaking hot dogs on the sideline, but instead in a blowout game, but instead they're there, helmets on, you know, paying attention, you know, rooting on. We've seen offensive linemen, you know, have to come in for a blown shoe. There's no need for a timeout. They don't have to search out their helmet. They're just in there, call the play, you know, let's do it. And so it's those types of little things. It's those types of readiness, you know, kind of moments of readiness that demonstrate I won't say professionalism because I know that, you know, they're college kids, but just that readiness and that accountability and that leadership and character that coach talks about. I think this potentially is, you know, a team that Saban's going to, you know, reflect very fondly on at the end of his, you know, his career when he retires to the lake, which I hope is several years from now.
But right.
I think this team has some of those intangibles that, you know, that he espouses and that he proclaims, you know, so loudly and frequently.
Oh, I agree. Hey, anything else on defense before we jump to special teams?
Yeah, I'm gonna hit one more thing on defense, and it's, you know, it's almost the unofficial weekly segment on Adrian Hubbard. But there was a play, and I went back and, you know, clicked back and forth and watched it a couple times. But it was on a Cordero Patterson end around, and so, you know, Hubbard's, you know, Jack linebacker kind of walked up in a defensive end sort of position, and the tackle, you know, blocks down. And so he has sort of a free rein, and it's almost the keys that, you know, that sometimes you learn in high school, but it's the key that he didn't just burst into the backfield, but he stepped up, stayed on the line of scrimmage. And it's like he watched a bus go by.
Stayed broken down. Yep.
Yeah, he stayed broken down, but stayed at the line of scrimmage. And the pulling lineman just rode right past him. And if he had shot the gap, he would have been trucked. But instead, he just played back. The pulling lineman had his head on a swivel, like, where am I? Who's the guy that I'm supposed to block? There's no one here. So he ran right on by. Then Hubbard stepped up and forced Patterson back inside.
Right.
That's an impressive play. Because if he would have just stepped in like, oh, I wasn't blocked, he would have gotten run over, and then Cordero would have had a free pass to the outside. And so I thought just that I thought that was a very disciplined play. He read his key, but didn't get overexcited. He stayed in the moment, read his key, and then made the right play.
No, he did. Hey, there's one other thing on defense that I did forget to mention. We talk about depth, and we talk about the cupboard, and we talk about Saban, and if he ever leaves, we'll be better for three or 4 years after he's gone. Well, I just think that Tennessee kind of epitomized that a little bit because, everybody noticed watching at home and at the game that their leading running back was not in the game. And they told us that several times. And they told us, okay, we've got to find ways to get Patterson the ball. So Patterson was in the I formation in the red zone when he fumbles the ball because it's a sweep pitch.
Sure.
He's not used to being running back. He's at the wide receiver doing an end around like you just mentioned. They bring in their leading tackler, captain of their defense,
yes,
who I think had 14 tackles on the yes game. And he is your goal line running back. And so
he was their wildcat quarterback.
Yes. And so it was just interesting to me that they have had to go and get a linebacker and a wide receiver to play these plays because their leading running back's not in the game. We have two running backs gone for the year, and we still had two guys who put up the kind of numbers they did in this ball game.
No, that's true. When you have to take a wide receiver and linebacker to come in and play quarterback and running back, I don't know what else you need to say about it. But to their credit, they're a team that was averaging, I guess I don't know what their average was. I don't have that right in front of me, but they had scored 31. I don't think that's the average. I think that's the lowest that they had scored, or maybe they were averaging 31 and we held them to 13. But my point is they were putting points up. They were ranked.
They had 580 something yards of total offense a game.
Yeah.
Big time yardage.
They're ranked in the 20s or 30s nationally in terms of scoring points. So they're a team that's capable of putting up points. I think those two dynamic receivers go a long way in that direction, but it does point out to their thin if they have to bring in a linebacker to come in and play wildcat quarterback.
Oh, it does. What about special teams? Anything jumped out at you? Well, I'm sure a few things did, but what's the first thing that jumped out at you on special teams?
I guess the first thing is Cyrus Jones in for Christian Jones. And I started to wonder, is maybe that an injury thing? But I saw Christian running some routes. We threw the ball to him a couple of times. And so I just kind of nodded and said, okay, well, it must not have been the injury. It must have been some of his poor – and I don't think it's his talent level. I think it was some of his poor decisions in taking the ball out of the end zone or fielding it at the five, those types of things. And so I think he was removed for decision-making.
But that's awesome, right?
It's the right thing to do.
I don't mean it's awesome for him, but we were so upset in that last ball game with some of his really poor decisions. It's just nice to see that his lesson's going to be okay. Because let's face it, right? With Amari Cooper doing what he's doing, he's not going to be putting up the all-purpose yards he was before.
Yeah, and this is not an interpersonal statement against Christian Jones. I think it's more philosophical in managing your football team, and especially when you have the depth and talent to be able to do it. But you make bad decisions and you don't play. You make bad decisions and you don't get to do these things that you want to do. And so if you're going to run the ball out of the end zone and essentially lose yards for us, or if you're going to field the ball on the five and essentially lose yards for us, then you don't get the opportunity to make that bad decision again.
Right. I thought with the exception of Cyrus's one little bobble where he tried to run before he picked up a knuckleball, which was a bad decision. It could have been a big play if the game was closer. Those punt returns where he was able to bring the ball to midfield, he looked very comfortable running the ball back there on the punt returns.
Yeah. Now I will say that was about the highlight of the special teams. We missed a couple field goals I wasn't pleased with. We missed a PAT due to a bad snap I wasn't pleased with. We yielded a 45-yard kickoff return.
But that was the only one. Let's stop there for a quick second. He came in averaging something like 38 or 39 yards on kick returns, Cordell Patterson. And when I went back and looked at it,
of all the kickoffs we had, that was the only lapse.
And that's
not
fair.
Bad. It was 7 or 8 of them.
No, and that's fair. And maybe I'm getting spoiled because it was frustrating to see. But when you have someone that talented, you know, you can bottle them up for only so long. And so that's fine. If you want to give a pass on that one, the others are frustrating. And I'm going to tell you, and this is the same vein that we talked about last week, the most frustrating of all of those is it'll go down as a missed PAT, but it was a bad snap.
I know where you're going with this.
It was a bad snap to AJ. And so AJ's down there, fumbling with this bad snap. What if he had to make a play on that ball? And so here we've got our quarterback.
Get up quick and spin with his knee or something.
Here's our quarterback that is our season. And he's out there, putting himself in harm's way. And, you know, maybe it's just a bad snap that goes over everybody's head, but that gives a defensive player an opportunity to take a free shot at him. Just not a fan.
Oh, sure.
I'm just not a fan of that.
I was wondering, I wrote down myself, why is he even in that situation? You know, if we've got Cyrus that can step up, and if we've got all these players that can step up, there has to be somebody else on the team that can step up and do that. I mean, even Blake Sims, quite frankly. Blake Sims has shown he can throw the ball, you know, the 3 attempts he's gotten to complete. He also has the ability of being elusive. I mean, like you talked about years ago, right? Lining them up on the quad. Well, line up 20 of them in practice and just one after another and just see who can hold the ball the best.
Yeah.
I mean, this can't be freaking rocket science. I did notice, speaking of the kickoff return for a second, on the second kickoff of the game where Cade Foster kicks it to about the 8-yard line, I'm thinking, oh, great, here's a short kick. He was mauled at the 20-yard line by Tyler Hayes, Landon Collins, and John Fulton. Mm-hmm. And so there's an example of they were picking him up and putting him down. He only got 12 yards on that play. So there was a couple situations where – oh, and on that big kickoff return, by the way, also, who wasn't in the game on that particular play was Christian Jones, because guess who saves the touchdown was Amari Cooper. I don't know if you noticed, he was the safety man on that play, and he actually played it the way you're supposed to play it.
Okay.
He was the one back there that actually tackled him at midfield.
Okay. I missed that specifically, but, you know, that just, you know, I'm going to be the grumpy old man on stuff like that. I love that. You know, we have the players that can play and produce in those positions, but when they are also the star players on our offense and defense, and so Amari Cooper,
he could blow a knee on the tackle.
I'm just, you know, and like I said, I don't want to be the grumpy old man necessarily, but
I just wanted you to know that Cooper was the one back there on that play.
Yeah, so.
Hey, what about Cade Foster real quick? I got one more stat. I'm full of stats tonight here. I got one more stat to read off to you here, because, you know, we kid about Nick Saban and his specialty items, right? So we got the long kicker and the short kicker, and everybody knows all the struggles that Cade Foster has gone through. So after missing these two field goals, he's now 4 for 8 on the season. Jeremy Shelley is 8 of 8. But now for his career, Jeremy Shelley is 41 of 52 for a respectable 79%. Cade Foster is 13 of 26. That's pretty bad.
Yeah,
but 50% for his career.
That is an unfair comparison, though, because
he's the long guy. He's got the strong leg. He came in as a recruit saying he could kick it through the stadium.
But the farther – and that's fine what you say as a recruit. It's unfair to truly compare their statistics. You know, it's like Jim Brown used to say, you know, yards per carry, you know, but he was the back that was always in and goal line and short yardage and stuff like that, where it's only going to be a 2-yard run, and that's going to pull down your stats. The further away you get – you know, this is almost as simple as this. The longer the kick, the harder it is to make. And so if you're only kicking the short ones, that number should be higher. And if you're only kicking the long ones, that number should be lower. And a kicker who's kicking everything and hitting, you know, 62%, he's kicking the 50-yarder and the 22 yarder, and that just his numbers just average out over time. If I'm only kicking 30 yards and in, damn, your number better be good.
I'm with you, but here's what I'll say. None of the games have been close yet, so it's been a good problem to have. And it was good that he was in there in those situations. But given how we've played LSU twice last year, I think if we get into situations going forward where we are, let's just say, at the 30-yard line, right outside the red zone, and it's third down, I think you might see the play calling change a little bit as these games get more and more important to let's make damn sure wherever we get to, we're inside 40 yards so Shelly can be the one out there to kick. Yes, that sounds intuitive. We want the shorter kick we can get, but I would be shocked if you see if we're at the 35-yard line and it's going to be a 52-yarder or the 33-yard line and it's going to be a 50-yarder. I bet you won't see us take a shot for the end zone and just settle for that 50-yard field goal, knowing Cade's going to be the one to have to kick it.
No, and it may be a situation where it's third and 10 and we run a 4 or 5 yard play and you wonder, why would you only do that? Well, because that route is relative to Shelley's money line.
Exactly. That was my point. That's what I think you might see with these couple games that we have left.
That's a good point. That's something we'll have to watch for. You know, hopefully it doesn't come down to that type of situation. You know, maybe for grins, you know, we do something like that going into a half, but hopefully, you know, the game's not on the line in that type of situation. But that'll be something to track, and that'll be an interesting thing to keep an eye on. I'm going to flip a little bit and go game balls. Offense, defense, what kind of game balls are you giving out?
I'm going to start with defense, and we don't need to spend any time with it, but I'm giving it to I'm going to give a one game ball to Ballou, just because I do think this might have been a little bit of a coming out party for him, and he's not a headline guy yet. But my other one's going to Dixon. If you outrun our two starting safeties, man, you deserve a game ball.
Okay, fair enough. I'm giving a game ball to one of those safeties. I'm giving a game ball to Lester. His pick in the end zone I thought was impressive. It halts a drive in which they were potentially going to score to make it a two-score game. He just plucks the ball off the fingers of the receiver. It was a little bit behind the receiver, but it was certainly catchable. It just put him in a trailing position. It just put him in position to make that play. But I think that was a heartbreaking, it was a crushing blow to Tennessee. You know, like I said, going to make it a two-score game. He just plucks the ball out of the air, and he does something that I wish Christian Jones had done last week, is just take, you know, go down in the end zone. And I think he was none too pleased then, you know, just to slide down in the end zone and you know, take the ball out to the 20. And so I'm giving Robert Lester my mini game ball.
All right. Who do you have on offense? I'm going to let you go first so you won't steal mine.
See, I don't understand that, because you did that last week. By letting me go first, it increases the potential that I could steal your guy, but that's fine. Tommy Logic. I'm going Kenny Bell with my mini game ball. He had two catches for 68 yards and a touchdown. And then so he had two things.
Trick pony, one first down, one touchdown in the game, one of his two catches.
That's fair, but he did a couple of things that really stood out to me. On his touchdown route, he threw his hand up, you know, indicating that he was open. And he didn't really break off his route. That's what I thought it looked like, but I went back and watched it a couple times. But he did slow up. And the safety had a bead on him over the top. And so he threw his hand up in the air, slowed up just a little bit, got the ball, and then was able to run it in for the end zone. So I thought that was impressive. You know, maybe that was his adjustment on the ball, or that was his adjustment on the route. I don't know, but I thought that was impressive. And then on a long run by Yeldon, he provided a nice crackback block. And I thought, well, that's nice. Our smallest receiver is out there, you know, mixing it up and, you know, breaking a long run. And when you break long runs like that, you have some receivers blocking downfield. So it was good to see Kenny Bell do that. So he gets my mini game ball.
All right. Well, that is a great segue for mine. You'd have never guessed mine in a million years. But it's going to be Kelly Johnson. Saban has a knack for finding these seniors who have been on the team, who have either been a walk-on or a scholarship player that fell by the wayside, who just gets their head beat in day after day after day, year after year, and finds a way to the field to just contribute. And there was a couple opportunities where Kelly Johnson is in the H-back, not a big tight end, but Kelly Johnson. He's given up 30 pounds to a defensive end or a linebacker. Does he make the best block you ever want to see? No. But he sacrifices his body and gets knocked back, but he still just gives the running back just long enough for, you know, him to get by. Mm-hmm. And so he's not doing what Fowler was doing, but he's still in there. He's still played all seven games as a walk-on so far. And I just love that Saban finds these guys year after year.
Sure. No, I think that's fair. I think that's a fair mini game ball. So next week we have Mississippi State coming to town. You know, they always play us tough, but they're the number 12 ranked team this week. They are undefeated.
So that's a big in itself. Yeah.
It is. So anytime you get two undefeeds playing this late in the season, that kind of is attention grabbing. What are your thoughts on the Bulldogs?
You know, they seem to be playing a very good defensive side of the ball. They're coming in ranked ninth in scoring defense, 25th in total defense. You know, they come in number one in the nation in turnover margin, which is important. But I do want to temper this a little bit with the fact that I'm just not really impressed with who they've played so far. And so I they're excited. They're undefeated. Who knows when the last time they were 7-0. But let's be fair. They beat Jackson State. They beat a crappy Auburn team. They barely beat Troy. They didn't really hang too many on South Alabama, Middle Tennessee. And hell, they gave up 31 points, you know, to Tennessee a couple weeks ago. So I think if they had played a little bit tougher schedule, they wouldn't be 7-0 right now. And so I think it's going to be a tough game. It might be the 31-20 type of score or 31-17 score that I tried to predict last week. I should have added the two scores together and I would have got what we should have scored. But I'll give this like a 31-17 game. I think that surely we can't almost score 50 again. We've got to have a little bit of a letdown.
Well, I see this game as it's you know almost a marketer's dream because they get to pitch all of the undefeateds and you know competing for the West and da 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 da. But I think Mississippi State's really a paper giant. You know, Vegas has installed us as a 24-point favorite.
Oh, I did not realize that. That's kind of funny over an undefeated team.
Which is, yeah, that's a huge number.
That speaks to those Troy, South Alabama opponents.
Well, it really does. And they're ranked number 50 nationally in total offense. And so that puts them squarely behind Tennessee, who we just held to 13 points. It puts them behind Ole Miss, which we held to 14 points. It actually puts them behind this will be a surprise to you. It puts them behind Arkansas, who granted, we shut them out.
Who didn't play with their quarterback for most of the year.
Yeah, and so that's a little bit, you know, that's part of the reason there. But it really puts them behind some teams that we've held down. So I think that we'll be able to handle them, handle their offense. Their defense may be a stronger defense than we face. So maybe that slows us up for a quarter or for a half. But, you know, I see this as a 34-16 type ball game. I just had envisions of 31-13 for most of the day. And I thought, well, maybe we probably add another field goal, hit a long one, and, you know, maybe they do as well. So I'm thinking 34-16.
Okay. Well, man, if you don't have anything else, I have enjoyed it.
Well, fantastic. This has been another edition of the Alabama Football Podcast. Hit us up on Facebook or go to our website and drop us an email. In the meantime, roll tide.
Thanks for listening to the Alabama Football Podcast. We love that you're tuned in and hope that you enjoyed the show. We encourage you to reach out and let us know what you like, where we can improve, or just a shout out, a roll tide. We are where you are. iTunes, Facebook, Twitter, email newsletters, t-shirts, free roster downloads, and of course, on the web at alabamafootballpodcast.com. Check us out where you'll find easy links to your favorite way to follow the Tide. Got that, Coach?
Aye.
Of course. Roll Tide.